What's on the horizon with resuscitation research? Have you heard about Heads Up CPR and wondered what the heck people were talking about? Well, we've got the answers in another special crossover disaster podcast episode for you. If that's what you're looking for, you found it right here on this week's episode of The Medic Cast.
Transmitters? We don't need no stinking transmitters!
This is The Medicast, a podcast for EMS providers by EMS providers, featuring EMS news, products, tips, tricks, and commentary. So grab your gear and glove up. Here's today's show with the pod medic, Jamie Davis.
Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of The Medic Cast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and I'd like to take this opportunity to thank all of you for checking out this week's episode. We've got a great show for you, another crossover episode from the Disaster Podcast with Dr. Joe Holly and paramedic Jim Logan from Paragon Medical Education Group, who share with my co-host Sam Bradley and I what they've been doing in their recent research into resuscitation efforts and research into using a cadaver learning model. What are they doing to create a reliable cadaver model for investigating research into cardiac arrest? Well, you can find out here in this episode on the cutting edge of resuscitation research. Also, make sure you subscribe to the Disaster Podcast itself over at disasterpodcast.com or using your favorite iOS or Android podcasting app. Before we get to that segment that's coming up, we do want to make sure you do a couple of things. First, you want to check out the links and additional information for you available over at the MedicCast blog at mediccast.com/blog. There's a show notes link at the top of the page. Just click that link and it'll take you right to the most recent episode. And of course, you can scroll down there and find other episodes as well. There's also a search box. If you're looking for something, use some keywords and search for a specific topic. We've covered a lot of things over the years, but take some time and make sure you're following up on the information you hear us talk about in the show each week. Understand how it applies to your own EMS practice and protocols. If you want to get back in touch with me, I hope you'll do so. You can always email me at podmedic@mac.com. Shoot me an email with your comments and questions on the shows, or you can send me suggestions and interview ideas for future episodes. Either way, I work hard to respond back to every email that comes in, and I'm going to respond back to yours as well, so please keep those emails coming. Also, we've got EMS World Expo coming up really soon, so if you're going to be there in a couple of weeks, make sure you come by our Physiocontrol podcast studio and say hi. We'll be there along with Chris Montera, Sam Bradley, and others of your favorite EMS podcasters and bloggers, so come by and say hi. And just a heads up for all of you watching the video version of this podcast, the upcoming segment from the Disaster Podcast is an audio-only segment, so all you're going to see is the Disaster Podcast logo. You don't need to adjust your screen. It's supposed to be that way. Well, good day and welcome back to another episode here of the Disaster Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and it's great to have you all here today. We've got a really special and different episode for you today, a little twist on some things. We want to feature some really amazing research and some interesting developments going on in the field and realm of resuscitation today that have to do with our excellent sponsors, Paragon Medical Education Group, that have supported the Disaster Podcast from the very beginning. We want to take some time out here in this episode to feature some of the amazing things they're actually working on and some research they're involved with involving cardiac arrest and resuscitation. So we're going to talk about that a little bit today. We've got Joe Holly and Jim Logan on here. But before we get to Joe and Jim, want to just say hi to Sam Bradley. And Sam, you know, we've been doing this EMS thing and dealing with cardiac arrests and resuscitation for some time in our careers collectively. So this is some exciting stuff we're going to talk about today.
It is. And it's mind-blowing. I mean, I feel so out of my element here, but I'm sure that Joe and Jim, they'll enlighten anybody that listens to this. You are going to hear some truly cutting edge stuff that's never even been done before. So this is a side of Paragon we haven't seen, but we thought it was important enough, especially as we're going into EMS Expo, to let you guys know this part of what it is they do. So I'm really excited about this one.
Definitely. So let's just segue into, we have Jim Logan and Dr. Joe Holly here from Paragon Medical Education Group. You guys have heard them before here on the show, but they're going to be talking about this really advanced practices that are being researched right now with managing cardiac arrest. And I'm going to let Joe kind of introduce this topic because this is something they're going to be dealing with and actually demonstrating for a limited audience at EMS World Expo. So Joe, welcome back to the show, and why don't you just jump in and fill us in?
Well, hi guys. It's certainly great to be back again. And this is a little bit of a different approach, not necessarily directly disaster related, although I suppose you could say a cardiac arrest is a disaster for somebody. But it is some stuff that Jim and I have been pretty heavily involved in, and we're beginning to see a little bit of the information that's been coming to light based on this research coming out in some of the journals. I know there was an article in EMS Expo or EMS World magazine. Actually, it was on the front cover of Heads Up CPR. And Jim and I have been lucky enough to be involved with the folks at Advanced Circulatory and Dr. Keith Lurie in Minneapolis with some pretty amazing research on cardiac resuscitation that has so many different aspects to it. It's almost too much to cover, but you know, we wanted to at least try to talk to folks a little bit about what we've been doing, what kind of things we're seeing, and sort of what may be percolating up in the world of CPR and cardiac resuscitation in the near future. So, Jim, you want to add a little bit there too?
Yeah, sure. Thanks for talking about this tonight. We're kind of really excited to be on the forefront of this research. So it's just preliminary, but the results are very promising. We've been using porcine models to demonstrate or recreate, if you will, cardiac arrest in pigs. And using all those things that PETA has in place for us to do that safely and safely. So what we've been able to do is put the model into VFib and do everything from standard CPR to heads-up CPR with and without the new device by Advanced Circulatory Zoll. Called the rescue pump, and with the use of the rescue pod. And we've been able to look at the differences with and without the devices and with and without heads-up CPR. And it's been truly amazing to see the differences and the survivability look for this approach is very promising.
So let me maybe...
Go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead, Jamie. Well, that's all right. So what I was going to do is just kind of give everybody an overview of sort of what we've been doing, touching on the stuff that Jim was just talking about. And so, you know, we've clearly started with sort of standard CPR. We have essentially been looking at pressures and flows that we can generate with good quality CPR. And so we've been measuring what kind of aortic blood pressure we can generate. We're measuring what the intracranial pressure is, what's this basically the cerebral perfusion pressure, how much what's the pressure head across that's generating blood flow through the brain. And trying to look at that and see what sort of, once we measure those with standard CPR, what kind of resuscitation outcomes do we have, and what things can we do that improve our resuscitation outcomes? So as Jim mentioned a minute ago, one of the advances there has been the concept of active compression, decompression CPR, where you not only are pushing down on the chest to, in essence, kind of squeeze on the heart and force blood out, but that you actively lift up on the chest, which generates increased vacuum or negative pressure inside the chest. And what that does is help pull more blood back into the chest, fill the heart up that much more, so that when the next time you're ready to compress, there's more blood there to flow forward. And so we've seen improvements in cerebral perfusion and all sorts of stuff when we do that. You can enhance that even further if you utilize an impedance threshold device that's known in the commercial world as the rescue pod. And what that does is that puts about approximately a 10 millimeter mercury pressure head to get air flowing back into the chest. So in essence, it's sort of like you're using the chest like a bellows. And when you go to expand the chest and suck air in, you put a little bit of resistance in the airway. And what that does is makes you have to suck harder to get the air to flow through there. What that does is generate a deeper vacuum inside the chest. And what that does is pull that much more blood back into the chest so that the heart is that much fuller. So having first noticed that and the addition of the impedance threshold device, we saw significant improvements again in things like cerebral perfusion pressure. We maintain blood pressure, et cetera. Then there was a really, really interesting story from a physician in Korea who's an EMS physician there and who was noticing a relationship between patients who experience cardiac arrest in these high-rise apartment buildings in large Korean cities. And those apartment buildings are, very tight. The elevators especially are very narrow. They're so narrow that you can't get a stretcher or a backboard in there horizontal. They have to be stood up to get them in there. So the idea was, well, we want to improve blood flow into the head. So it sort of makes intuitive sense that maybe we should put the head down so that we enhance the amount of blood flowing into the brain. And when we looked at that, what we found was that actually made things worse. That reduced the cerebral perfusion pressure. And after we sort of dug into that with a little bit more detail, what we discovered was that it seems to be less about pushing blood into the head as it does enhancing pulling blood out of the head. So if you put the head up about 30 degrees or so, what you get is gravity helping you flow blood out of the brain. That creates less back pressure. That creates a larger pressure drop across the brain, so your cerebral perfusion pressure is better. And what you get is enhanced resuscitation from having done that. So the concept now of looking at heads up CPR or gravity assisted CPR or whatever this is going to be called, we're just getting underway with that. And part of what we've been doing with that is trying to find a way to be able to use a cadaveric specimen that we can simulate those same kind of pressures in as we do CPR and flow and be able to measure those and then to use that to develop a kind of a standard model by which other researchers could use to compare different approaches to CPR, different devices, different techniques, et cetera. So that's kind of where we are now. There's a lot more we can talk about, but I didn't want to go on too long without questions or anything that Jim might want to add there.
Jim, you want to jump in there? I have a question, but go ahead.
So we've done exactly what Joe has said, and Dr. Laurie has done it on a porcine model several times before. But what we did differently this time is we did it on the porcine model, and then we did it on a cadaveric porcine model. And we got very similar results to the cardiac arrest and the cadaveric pig, if you will. So what our hopes are in November think that'll be after the EMS World event. We'll be going back to Minnesota and trying this on a human cadaver model as well. So we should know more about what's going on, but it's some pretty exciting stuff to see. You know, we talk a lot about, you know, getting the blood circulated. Very seldom do we talk about, you know, the cerebral flow. But as we all know, that's what's going to make someone, you know, walk out of the hospital and discharge after a cardiac arrest event. So what this does is it decreases the these things in place, decreases the intracranial pressure that we want to stay away from in CPR, and it increases the cerebral blood flow to the brain. So drain the brain, fill the heart, as one of our instructors talks about when he talks about the impedance threshold device and the rescue pump. So I think that's it's something pretty exciting. I know we've talked a lot about it. It's complex, but it's really simple, the physiology is. So I'll stop there.
It's just amazing that, you know, for so many years, CPR was just a function of trying to get the heart back. But now the focus has totally shifted to not just getting these people's heart pumping, but to get them out of the hospital neurologically intact. And I certainly don't have any stats in front of me. Jamie's probably better at that. But I just look here locally at what our fire departments are doing. And like you said, Joe, just one of our counties uses the rescue pod on every patient. And just to see when we get feedback on these people, how many are walking out of the hospital neurologically intact, it's just mind-blowing. And I want to ask you this, you know, the newer CPR standards, the AHA standards are out. This sounds like it's well above and beyond that. This is really next-level thinking. Would you agree?
I absolutely would. Obviously, the, you know, American Heart has, you know, it's kind of been establishing the standards for a long time in how we do things, how we approach things. And, you know, part of their processes, of course, is peer review, as it should be. And you know, there's an awful lot of folks that are involved in those decisions, and they try to make it so that it makes sense for everybody. But, you know, I think all that stuff takes a fair amount of time to get done. And the stuff we're seeing now, I think, is research that's going to impact probably not the current set of guidelines that are, you know, the latest set, but probably the next set. As we move forward in, you know, looking at making some clinical changes so that we can utilize some of these concepts that we're currently making progress on understanding.
So what's the nursing perspective, Jamie?
Well, I tell you, it's a really exciting time to be involved with the work of teaching people resuscitation. And as I'm a CPR instructor, I teach nurses, I teach physicians, I teach paramedics and students at all levels. And, you know, it hasn't been that long ago. And Jim, Joe, you both might remember this. Sam, I'm sure you've dealt with this too. It wasn't that long ago that I had a real hard time getting the professional rescuers excited about CPR. It was a necessary evil to recertify. They had the opinion that, well, they're dead anyway because nobody ever comes back. You know, it was really a doom and gloom outlook. And in the last 5 to 10 years, that has turned completely 180 degrees around. And we are seeing just in the changes that the updates have brought about in 2010 and before that 2005, and the upcoming updates that are coming in 2015, I think we're really going to see, you know, just this continued shift where people are excited about getting out there and saving lives in resuscitation events. And this is just, like you said, next level stuff. But this is how, you know, we're seeing changes in the hospital setting. EMS actually led the charge with this. Hospitals are still catching up with the ways that they respond in some cases, outside of the emergency department at least, the ways that they respond to cardiac arrest in the facilities. And the survival rates are still not where a lot of people think they should be there. But the nursing perspective on this has shifted as well as that of the professional perspective in the emergency space.
Well, I'd certainly like to see our field troops, our paramedics and EMTs get excited about this too. So, Joe, is there any have you done any practical application of any of this? And have you seen any? I see there's a lot of white papers in your future, but what's been happening so far that might get you excited, might get us excited?
Well, I think part of what we're seeing is, efforts to try to push some of this laboratory science out into the field in a practical way. And I think we are seeing some of that with the article that was just in the EMS World magazine that talked about, that service literally is taking their patient on the backboard and, using a Pelican case and the ability of the stretcher to fold to try to raise the head a little bit. It's not really clear. Part of what we're trying to do right now is to figure out what's the best way to do that. There's a little bit of evidence that we've done so far that says it works much better if you're able to sort of elevate the head of the bed, but not the lower half of the body. In other words, it's not putting the patient on a flat surface and then raising the flat surface. It's flexing the patient at the waist and only raising the head that seems to make the most difference. So there's a lot of refinement, I think, that needs to be done before we can sort of say this absolutely makes sense. We ought to be doing it. Obviously, the only way we make some progress in some of this stuff is by people getting out and doing that. But, as Jamie was talking about sort of the nursing perspective here, one analogy that became very clear to me that I think is valuable to folks who do in-hospital care has to do with sort of what we're seeing from a pressure standpoint intracranially as we do CPR. And that, in essence, in patients whose head is, who are flat, when we do CPR, especially because we don't have great blood flow out of the head, we end up with a pressure wave so that every time you compress the chest, you send a pressure wave up through the blood column into the head. And if you look at that from a pressure standpoint and sort of what happens to the neurons after that and all that sort of stuff, it looks very much like the closed head injury models that are out there. And so part of our thought process is by doing CPR with the patient flat, are we perhaps contributing to the bad neurologic outcome, not because of a flow problem, but because we are literally repeatedly causing a traumatic head injury by pounding on their chest and forcing this pressure column to, bang, bang, bang into their head. And so, looking at it from the way the neurologist and neurosurgeons look at head injury, where they take those patients who are in the neuro ICU and they elevate the head of their bed to keep their intracranial pressure down, maybe that ought to be being done in cardiac arrest patients for the same reasons, because we're trying to reduce that pressure, pounding pressure wave that continues to pulsate through the head during all this time.
I have a question because this is a mechanical question, really. This sounds like it's going to completely change the mechanics of CPR from a rescuer perspective, because we're going to have to come up with a different way to do CPR. Yeah, I mean, a different way to do CPR.
Yeah.
I mean, do you straddle them at the waist and press forward onto the chest? I mean, I'm trying to think of a best way to get the leverage necessary, because it's hard work. And especially if you're also doing if you're using something like the rescue pump that's going to be pushing down, but then also compressing, you're pulling back to create that negative pressure, you've got to be able to pull and push and have the leverage to do both.
Well, you're exactly right, so, Jamie. And it's go ahead, Jim. I'll let you take this one.
Yeah. So, with that said, so if you use a Lucas device or something like it mechanically, that's great, because if that's consistency, but it only gives you about 3 pounds of backward pressure to create the increased negative. So with a rescue pump, it goes about 20 pounds of negative pressure to get that active decompression, if you will. So it's a suction cup device that's very simple in its engineering, but it expands that chest cavity to pull that blood back to the heart, drain the brain at the same time. But when you combine it with the heads up, like the doctor in Korea found, the change in the pressure, the decrease in intracranial pressure, and the increase in cerebral perfusion pressure is incredible. It's very dynamic. So each change from standard CPR to the heads up with the active compression decompression is totally amazing. And so, by the way, there is no evidence out there whatsoever, that this is from Dr. Lori, that supports why we do flat CPR other than a flat surface. That's it.
Wow, well, I get that. I mean, I can completely see that. We just do it because this is the way we've always done, and it's another one of those things.
Right.
But I just, as an instructor, I start trying to wrap my brain around trying to teach people a completely new way. I mean, do you leave Pop-Up in the recliner and do CPR
at home? Do you do CPR at a 45-degree angle?
Right.
I mean, there's a whole series of challenges around doing that, you know, and that's something that we can sort of do in the lab that's much less easy to translate into the field without some changes in, you know, equipment and training and kinesiology and everything else that you're talking about. You're exactly right.
Well, it's interesting. This comes right behind all the changes in C-spine, the spinal motion restriction, that now using mattresses and various things, we actually are sitting people up. And the whole idea of having them supine was to have a flat surface to compress against rather than doing it, for instance, on a mattress. But I would put the word out there to any equipment manufacturers listening, you got some work to do. maybe on reconstructing gurneys and maybe creating some wedge device for CPR. I mean, there's all kinds of possibilities here to be first on your block with something that might accommodate this new stuff.
I think you're exactly right there. You know, it has the potential to make an awful lot of different things necessary if we're gonna do this right. And I don't know that we're at a point yet where we can say this is definitely where we need to be. I think, you know, our goal in doing this research is to I think literally to try to develop a model that is consistent with what we see in real cardiac arrest and CPR, and be able to then use that model to try out all these different things and figure it all out, so that, you know, when it is ready to go into the field, we've sort of tweaked it where it needs to be, and we're getting the absolute best quality CPR that we can do.
And it's important to say that this is still at the research level, like you said, Joe. It's not field ready, but it's some interesting cutting edge stuff that you guys are working on. And I'm just curious, you know, I know you talked before we started recording about some things you guys have coming up with Paragon Medical Education Group at EMS World Expo coming up in Las Vegas in mid-September. Some of the people listening to this may well be attending that event. Is there going to be a way they're going to be able to see some of this stuff you guys have been talking about here, or be able to catch up with you to even talk with you about it?
Well, Jim, I'll let you take that one.
Yeah, so we were approached by, after the research, we were approached by Zoll and Advanced Circulatory to do some demonstration on human tissue with the rescue pump and the rescue pod, and show some of the preliminary research that we've just been talking about there at the EMS World. We're going to do something a little unique. You know, Paragon, we do state and local and national EMS events, and we're going to do something a little bit different this time. Instead of being in a breakout session in a room that's far off, this actual demonstration will be Dr. Holly will be there with another member of our Paragon staff, and it will be on the exhibit
show for. It'll be a secured area. You'll have to go and speak to the folks. You'll see the folks at Zoll and Advanced Circulatory to gain access and get that golden ticket. We want to protect our donors as much as we can, but we also want to show our industry what's innovative and what's coming down the pipe as far as resuscitation.
Well, I hope I'm one of them. I definitely want to be a fly on that wall. I'm not sure I understand all this as much as the rest of you guys do. And like you, Jamie, I'm thinking about how we're going to translate this into basic field education. But it certainly is exciting stuff, and I can't wait to see where you guys go with it.
Well, I think it's like we said, this isn't quite ready for prime time, and part of that getting it ready for prime time will be answering some of those questions that you have, Sam, and questions that I have, and part of that research will be translating it into the most efficient mechanical way to administer CPR from an individual rescuer that takes these potential changes into account and finds the way that we can best compress the chest in that type of situation. And so I think this is going to be an interesting look at maybe we're getting a sneak peek at what's coming out in the 2020 ECC updates, because the 2015 updates are just around the corner.
Well, it's funny, Jamie, because we might look back at this in 2020 and replay this conversation and say, yes, we knew them when. We knew when they were at the cutting edge of making this happen. It'll be pretty exciting.
The Logan Holly method.
There you go.
Oh, my God. Wow. Yeah. We did the research here recently, took the flight home, and we were really, it's breathtaking to be on something this exciting. So I kind of, thought about it as, it may be the next phase of, how the pioneers went from internal cardiac massage to, I don't think this external stuff's going to work too well. But it did work. It's worked very well. And there's been a lot of changes over the past 30, 40 years. And I hope I'm part of that change for survival.
So, Joe, if somebody wants to get in touch with you and try to find a way to connect to get that golden ticket, and you direct them to the people, whether it's at Zoll or your other sponsor, where can they find you at Paragon Medical Education Group?
Well, Paragon is on the web at paragonmedicalgroup.com, and we're on Facebook as well under the same name. You can find our Twitter feed at ParagonMedEDU, and we'll certainly be trying to tweet out some stuff that's going on while we're there. They can also reach us through the Disaster Podcast. As far as the incident going on at the expo this year, we'll want to hook folks up with the Advanced Circulatory folks that are now part of the Zoll company. To learn about what we're doing, and that's where they'll get their access tickets to get into to experience the stuff we're going to be doing there.
And I'll actually be able to look up and get you guys some booth numbers in the show notes for this episode for that, so people can figure out where they need to go. And also, I have to say, look for us in the podcast studio. Sam and I will be there with the Disaster Podcast, my other shows, the Medic Cast, and we're going to be talking. EMS Garage will be there with Chris Montero. So we're going to be talking about a lot of things, and I'm sure this will be one of the topics that comes up there as well. So make sure you come by and say hi to us in the podcast studio as well. But Joe, we'll have links and information on where those booths are so that people know where to go find you.
Sounds great.
Sam, where can folks find you in the net?
They can see me sitting here in complete shock. This stuff is just amazing me. I'm in the usual social media places under Sam Bradley or Sam Bradley 11. Certainly at thedisasterpodcast.com, and I'm hoping, seriously, if we don't get some discussion out of this, Jamie, then everybody's asleep out there, because this this is such new cutting-edge stuff. I love it.
Yeah, definitely. And so I urge folks, as always, come back to disasterpodcast.com. leave a comment on the episode and let us know what your thoughts are. This is, again, just a little bit different look at things. I mean, but cardiac arrest is a disaster and a major incident in some systems when you are somewhat overwhelmed with having enough rescuers to perform adequate CPR and do the other things you need to do. So it is something that kind of ties into our topic, and definitely this type of research is really the cutting edge type of stuff we love to talk about on this show. So head over to disasterpodcast.com, leave a comment about this episode, and again, follow up on the show notes there, click the link and head over to paragonmedicalgroup.com and check in. And if you're going to be at EMS World Expo in September in Las Vegas, you need to come by and see us and see if you can get in and check out this amazing demonstration that's going to be going on out there. So Sam, you know, this, we could be talking about this a lot, but in many different ways, and we've talked about the disaster aspects of it. This is a little bit different. I don't know how to end this one. What do you think?
Well, let's see. What can we say about this? Innovative medicine is not your everyday medicine.
That's going to wrap up this week's episode of the MedicCast. I want to thank all of you for checking out the show this week, and of course, remind you to follow up on all of the information you get in this week's show over at the MedicCast blog. That's at mediccast.com/blog. Over there, you'll find a show notes link at the top of the page. Go ahead and take a moment and follow up on all of the information and links to news items and more you find there each week. You can also sign up for our email newsletter that'll bring you those links directly into your email inbox each week if you want. There's a form on the right-hand side of the page. Just go ahead and fill that out, and you can get the MedicCast newsletter for yourself. I also welcome your comments and suggestions by email. So if you want to get back in touch with me, shoot me an email to podmedic@mac.com. Send in your ideas for news links, ideas for future show topics or interviews, whatever comments you might have. I really do look forward to hearing from you, and I'll make sure I get back to you. I work hard to respond back to every email that comes in, so please keep those emails coming. If you want to catch up with me on social media and some of the pages and sites out there, you can find me at most places under the handle PodMedic. So you can catch me over at Twitter at twitter.com/PodMedic or Facebook at facebook.com/PodMedic. Friend or follow me over there. Also, don't forget to check out our MedicCast Facebook page. We now have over 5,000 followers, so head over to facebook.com/MedicCast. Click the like button on the top of the page and join the community over there. That's going to wrap up this week's episode of the MedicCast. Please make sure you spread the word and share the MedicCast with your colleagues and students and friends in the EMS world. I'll be back here each week with new episodes, new interviews, news items, tips, and more every Monday morning to start off your EMS week. Tell somebody else about the MedicCast today. I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic. It's time to close out the show. Don't forget to thank our sponsors. And remember, folks, scene safety, BSI.